श्याम कुंदर
today from Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, fourth chapter, the final verses, number 35 and 36, which we're going to chant and recite together. Atmanam cha kuru shesta.
Atmanam cha kuru shesta.
Krishna Manashikshitam
Krishna Manashikshitam
Dayangate Bhagavate
Dayangate
Bhagavate Rudroda Prema Vivala Kalindya Kati Bishidha
Kalindya Kati Bishidha
Ahobhir Bharatarshava Prapodyatta Sasaritam
Yatra
Mritra Sito
Muni
Atmanam Chuk Atmanam Chakuru Shista Krishna Manashikshitam Jayangate Bhagavate Rudroda Prema Vivala Kalindya Kati Bishidha Ahobir Bharatarshava Prapadyatta Sasahitam Yatra Mitra Suto Muni. Please chant. Himself. Cha. Also. Kuru Shesta.
O
best amongst the Kurus.
O best amongst
the Kurus. Krishnena. By Krishna.
Manasa.
By the mind.
Ikshitam.
Remembered.
Dayan.
Thus thinking of. Gati.
Having gone.
Bhagavate.
Of the devotee.
Rudroda.
Cried loudly.
Prema Vivala.
Overwhelmed by the ecstasy of love.
Kalindya.
On the bank of the Jamuna.
Kativi.
A few.
Siddhe.
Being so past,
Ahobi,
days,
Bharatarishab,
O
best of the Bharata dynasty,
Prapadyata,
reached,
Swasaritam,
the celestial water of the Ganges,
Yatra,
where?
Mitrasuta,
the son of Mitra.
Muni,
sage.
Translation.
Understanding that he was remembered by Lord Krishna while Lord Krishna was quitting this world, Vidura began to cry loudly, overwhelmed by the ecstasy of love. After passing a few days on the bank of the river Jamuna, Vidura, the self-realized soul, reached the bank of the Ganges, where the great sage Maitreya was situated. Purport for Srila Prabhupada. Vidura was overwhelmed by the ecstasy of love when he understood that Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thought of him at the last moment. Although he thought of himself as insignificant, he was remembered by the Lord by his causeless mercy. Vidura accepted this as a great favor, and thus he cried. This crying is the last word in the progressive path of devotional service. One who can cry for the Lord in love is certainly successful in the line of devotional service. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to the fourth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Vidura Approaches Maitreya. Om Gyanatamarandasya Janan Janashalakaya Chaksur Unmelitam Yenatas My Sri Guru Vedamaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Lam Jayati Vidhi Yakripatamaham Bande Sri Guru Vinitarim Vanchakapaturidhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vahevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavi Vidhi Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Sridharadha Shivasati Gaura Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, my only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune, and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. By your recitation, one attains transcendental bliss because your syllables shower pure love of God. You are to be served by everyone, always, for you are an incarnation of Lord Krishna. These words, this sentence here. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of whichever. Are very desirable for devotees to hear, for followers of Srila Prabhupada to hear, because it means that we're progressing, working through the Srimad Bhagavatam step by step, and hopefully progressively advancing in the devotional path. This is the purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam. As Prabhupada says, the first canto is compared to the lotus feet of the Lord up to the 10th canto, which is the Lord's lotus face. And the devotee progressively starts with the least level of understanding. And by the time they reach the intimate pastimes of the Lord in the 10th canto, progressive advancement should be the result. This is the goal. This is the process of Prabhupada's presentation of the Bhagavatam. And this is why these words, thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports, show that, okay, another chapter accomplished. But it allows us to also look at ourselves and say, have I accomplished anything in the course of that chapter? Have I made progress? Have I moved towards greater understanding of the Bhagavatam, greater advancement in living the Bhagavatam, and ultimately for us and the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, greater advancement in sharing the message of the Bhagavatam? So it's always a great joy when you read that sentence. So this first verse today is a bold example of the very fact, and I don't say fact with a question mark, but very strongly, the very fact that the process of bhakti is a process of emotions. We should make no mistake about it. We find that the Mayavadis, the impersonalists, they deride the feeling of emotions due to their associating those emotions with this Maya, this illusion of the material world. They've experienced so much pain and suffering in this material world, they connect it all to being a part of this material world, and therefore cut all of this off. Relationships off, personalities off, emotions off, get rid of all of that. But we see that this is not really the process the Bhagavatam describes. Such personalities, they're very hard-pressed to understand the devotional life of bhakti, a process that is itself filled with so many emotions, just as the Lord is filled with so many emotions. Rupa Goswami has given us in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, as Srila Prabhupada translated it, the Nectar Devotion, different examples of relationships in devotional service. Different examples of emotions that the Lord himself feels for his devotees. Now, granted, in the Nectar Devotion, we see the examples of Krishna's relationships with the cowherd boys, with the gopis, with his parents. But we can also understand that we have a place in that process of developing a relationship with the Lord. This is why the great acharyas, such as Rupa Goswami, have given us these writings, so that we can look at them and see, oh, I have these feelings of emotions. Here in this material world, they may or may not have served me well, but I can use those to catapult me by purifying them through the progressive path of understanding the Bhagavatam to the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, to an intimate emotional relationship with him. Sometimes we hear the phrase, oh, you're just too emotional. That may well be true. Many of us are. You know, but the reality is that is because the emotions relate to the heart. I'm sure someone that has much more knowledge of psychology and all of these things could give a much greater explanation of how the emotions work through to the mind and connect with the heart and the feelings and on and on and on. But the reality is that they're right here in the pages of the Bhagavatam. But those who have embraced the impersonalist path, those who have rejected all of these things, they have no access. They have no entrance to these wonderful relationships. Now, we find this distinction between the Mayavadis and the personalists, the Bhakti bodies, as Prabhupada uses in one place. We find this distinction mentioned very early on by Srila Prabhupada in his purports. In the Bhagavad Gita, 10th chapter, 11th verse, Prabhupada notes that when Lord Chaitanya was in Benares, promulgating the chanting of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, thousands of people were following him. Prakasananda Saraswati, a very influential and learned scholar in Benares at that time, derided Lord Chaitanya for being a sentimentalist. Sometimes, Mayavadi philosophers criticize the devotees because they think that most of the devotees are in the darkness of ignorance and are philosophically naive sentimentalists. This is Prabhupada's own words. Of course, quoting the mindset of Prakasananda Saraswati. Now, first of all, we have to appreciate that Prakasananda Saraswati wasn't just some bogey yogi in America, you know, just popped up with a name for himself and threw a gathering together and created some philosophy. He was a prominent, probably uses the word influential, and learned scholar in Benares. Very well known, very well respected, and very knowledgeable of the Vedas. Yet, we see he makes this, what we would consider, as followers of Mahaprabhu, horrid mistake of deriding Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And why did he deride? Well, he's simply a sentimentalist. You're simply, you know, just emotionally engaged in this process. Now, Prabhupada continues to point out that Mayavadi philosophers such as Prakasananda Saraswati, they generally think devotees are in the darkest of ignorance, which is really quite amazing when you look at the activities of the materialist and make a comparison. How could you even think they were in the same category? But at any rate, and that they are philosophically naive sentimentalists. Okay, philosophically naive sentimentalist. If we examine, going back to the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, there is nothing naive or philosophically incomplete about that book. If you study Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, you will have a complete and full philosophical understanding of the workings of this world and of the relationships of this world and of the manner for getting out of this world. So all right there. What to speak of, expand this out to the commentaries of Jiva Goswami, his different sandarbhas, are expanded out to the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, which may appear just to be some wonderful pastimes, but in reality is a very deep philosophical explanation of this world and the spiritual world. So such a statement as this simply shows the naivety of the Mayavadis, that they have not examined the philosophy. They've simply superficially looked to see, oh, they're just handy, they don't know anything. Even earlier than the 10th chapter in the Gita, in the second chapter, Prabhupada explains a little bit further. When Lord Chaitanya was asked by the great Vedic scholar, Prakasananda Saraswati, why he, the Lord, was chanting the holy name of the Lord like a sentimentalist instead of studying Vedanta philosophy, the Lord replied that his spiritual master had found him to be a great fool and thus asked him to chant the holy name of Lord Krishna. Now this is interesting because it carries two points with it. Number one, it carries the point of humility that is required for a disciple. A disciple should never make the erroneous statement or thought, erroneous thought process, that they know more than their spiritual master. You can get away with this in the business world. Sometimes where I'm working, somebody will, you know, from on high, as we say, the instruction will come down to do such and such. And I'm like, wait a minute, I've been here too long. I know that's not going to work. So you can second guess like that. You may or may not get your way. That's another story. But in the devotional process, one does not think like that. Oh, I know better than my spiritual master. One should consider himself to be a great fool, as the spiritual master will consider you to be a great fool. Now, this may come off insulting to some people. Oh, this person thinks I'm a fool. You're very fortunate if the spiritual master thinks you're a fool, because then he will give his time and energy to properly instruct you. This is the mood of the disciple relationship. This doesn't mean that the spiritual master is condescending, but it means he realizes you know nothing. Sanatana Goswami himself put himself forward like, Kayami, who am I? People call me a great learned man, but I have nothing. So the great devotees look at themselves like that. And then the second thing is that being a fool, what should you do? Just chant Hare Krishna. One of my favorite letters from Srila Prabhupada. Some devotee had written Prabhupada in the beginning and asked about 6,922 questions in a row. And Prabhupada very diligently went through and answered every one of them. Yes, this, that, yeah. And then at the end of the letter, Prabhupada said, in the future, if you have any questions, use your common sense. And if you don't have any, find someone that does. So Prabhupada, you know, put up with so much of this. But at any rate, you know, yes, but just chant Hare Krishna. So in this way, this point Prabhupada's making about Prakasananda and his exchange with Mahaprabhu, Mahaprabhu makes two very valid and two very essential points in the guru-disciple relationship. The disciples should feel themselves and legitimately present themselves as a fool, and the spiritual master will tell them to chant Hare Krishna. Now, further, in Srila Prabhupada's wonderful introduction to the Srimad Bhagavatam, in which he introduces the life story of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he dives a bit deeper into the subject of Prakashananda and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prabhupada says, the Mayavadi sannyasis designate themselves as Narayana. Varanasi is still over flooded with many Mayavadi sannyasis. Some people who saw the Lord in his Sankirtan party considered him to be actually Narayana. And this report reached the camp of the great sannyasi Prakasananda. This is a very interesting thing. Prabhupada is not in a mood of deriding Prakasananda. He gives Prakasananda his due. Great Vedic scholar, learned, influential, great sannyasi. So he gives him his credit. But as we see ultimately, in India, there is always a kind of spiritual rivalry between the Mayavad and the Bhagavata schools. And thus, when the news of the Lord reached Prakasananda, he knew that the Lord was a Vaishnava sannyasi. And therefore, he minimized the value of the Lord before those who brought him the news. Again, we see that Prakasimha is just dismissing Mahaprabhu as insignificant, nobody important. He deprecated the activities of the Lord because of his preaching, the Sankirtan movement, which was, in Prakasananda's opinion, nothing but religious sentiment. Prakasananda was a profound student of the Vedanta, and he advised his followers to give attention to the Vedanta and not to indulge in Sankirtan. Now, obviously, he missed certain parts of the Vedas that very clearly say that the chanting of the holy name is the Yuga Dharma for the age that he was himself living in. So I don't know how he missed that part, but apparently he didn't read that section, because if he's advising his followers, don't do Sankirtan, just study the Vedas. But what, you missed the point. You didn't read something. So, of course, we all know the outcome of this pastime. It's very significant and very wonderful how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu converts not only Prakasananda, I think it was his 10,000 followers, something like that. But it shows, this pastime shows how the mood of feeling and showing emotions is not always given the respect that it deserves. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and in the Chaitanya Bhagavata, and in the different pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, many of his own associates were distinguished by their show of emotions. We have the wonderful example of Pundarik Vidyaniti. Pundarik Vidyaniti, of course, externally appeared to be a pounds and shilling man. Devotees brought, I believe it was Gadadhar, to see him. And he was a very Pakanaishtika Brahmachari. He thought, oh, I'm coming to see some great sadhu, some renounced personality. And he sees Pundarik Vidyaniti dressed in the finest of, you know, clothes and a jaunty little turban on his head with a peacock feather sticking out of it, and surrounded by associates serving him with fans and betel nut. And he even, Chaitanya Bhagavat describes how he had a mirror right here for looking at himself. You know. And all of the, so when he came in, he looked at him and said, wow, this is an advanced devotee. But upon the recitation of certain key verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, and hearing these verses, and understanding in his heart of hearts the meaning of these verses, he completely fell into an ecstatic swoon, fainted, fell off the floor, and gave up all of his accrements of comfort and joy. So we have this pastime there with Pundarik Vidyaniti. There's also the wonderful example of Srivas Pandit. There was one Devananda Pandit who was a greatly learned speaker of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he was giving one discourse one day, surrounded by all of his students. And Srivas Pandit entered into the assembly to hear the discussion on Srimad Bhagavatam. Srivas Pandit himself had such a high, high level of devotion that upon hearing the recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam, he swooned in ecstasy, began rolling on the ground, middle of the class. You can just imagine, we're having class here and somebody comes in and, okay, Prabhu, get them out. You know, I've seen this happen, you know. Sometimes in Vrindavan, persons come and they are not in the ecstasy that they're manifesting. That's a different subject. But at any rate, okay, just politely remove this person. Well, in this case, Devananda's students did not politely remove Srivas Pandit. They rather roughly and rudely escorted him out of the assembly. Devananda, being an advanced devotee himself, follower of Mahaprabhu, should have realized, no, stop. But he didn't. He didn't do anything. Of course, we know the outcome of this story as well. But these are examples where prominent associates of Mahaprabhu were distinguished by the external manifestation of their emotional love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and how that emotion was prompted, in both of these examples, by Srimad Bhagavatam. And yet here we sit day in and day out, sometimes not even often, not even staying awake through the class. You know, you often hear in Prabhupada's lectures, chide the devotees for sleeping, or and in one class he goes quite on, this assembly is not for sleeping. Sleeping you go elsewhere. This assembly is for So Prabhupada knew who we were and what our tendencies were. So at any rate, the idea of manifesting emotions related to love of God has a very strong connection in our line itself. However, it is a great need to express caution in this regards. It is not a level or a symptom that can or should be easily manifested or displayed. As Prabhupada would say, it is not a cheap process. This is what sahajas are. They manifest a level that they don't actually have any qualification or realization to have. I mean, we rarely, on a handful of occasions, saw Srila Prabhupada manifest such displays of ecstasy. They were very minimal, because he knew if he displayed these, followers would imitate. So many things like that. Even during Mahaprabhu's life himself, he didn't show these types of symptoms in the beginning. If we study the life of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's a very chronological development, so to speak. Now, of course, this is all a lila, a manifestation of his pastime, but he first played the role of a scholar, of a debater, of a logician, and would even take fun and joy in teasing those that were already on the path of the Bhagavad and debating with them subjects. All this before receiving the mercy of Ishwarpuri. Once he received the mercy of Ishwarpuri, he began to develop and appreciate this love of God. And he began the Sankirtan movement. But even at that time, he was very cautious about such external displays. They would happen in rare circumstances. The Mahaprakasha Lila displayed at Srivasangam. Intimate associates, sometimes others who tried to get in. There was one Brahmachari Srivas brought in, and he said, "You just sit in the corner." Because Mahaprabhu was very controlled. The house of Srivasangam, the doors were locked once they began the Sankirtan movement. This is before the Sankirtan movement went out into the streets. And the doors would be locked, and only certain associates would be allowed in, the inner circle, so to speak. So this one Brahmachari was there, and Mahaprabhu began the kirtan, and he stopped it. Something's not right tonight. So is someone here that doesn't belong? No, everyone's belonging. Start there. No, something's wrong. And Srivas noted. He said, "Well, there's this one Brahmachari. What is his qualification? Oh, he only takes milk. By only drinking milk, one becomes qualified for love of God," Mahaprabhu said. Out with him. So performance of austerity and penance alone does not give one access to love of God. At any rate, so at this time, Mahaprabhu, only these symptoms be allowed in these circumstances. During the Mahaprakasha Lila, he would manifest all the different forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead according to their relationship and emotional connection with devotees. It was only in his later years in Jagannath Puri, in the Gambira, that he began to openly manifest these very, very deep and uncommon symptoms of ecstasy, love of God, crying, elongating the body, and losing consciousness, all these different things. Symptoms that are hard to see, especially for his dear servants, even harder to understand by those of us who have no qualification. And even those were shared only amongst a group of confidential associates. So we see that Mahaprabhu didn't just show these right off the bat. "I've appeared as a devotee, here's what you do." No, this was a progressive path that was instructive for us to know we should have a progressive. So although these ecstasies, they're clearly a part of the path of bhakti, they're not to be taken cheaply, not to be casually put on. These are the levels of the greatly advanced devotees that they've developed. Sadhakas of the highest caliber, such as noted here in this verse 35 about Madhura. Now, how do we know that Vidura was such an advanced devotee? Well, I mean, if you haven't been listening or paying attention through this last chapter, this entire chapter is basically devoted to the glories of Vidura, we can hear in this verse the proof is there. We hear how Krishna himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was remembering Vidura as he departed this material realm to return to the spiritual realm. We strive to remember Krishna at the time of death. When a devotee is departing this world, if it's known that they're going to be departing, sometimes devotees depart unexpectedly. But if a devotee is known they're departing, we surround, you know, pictures all over. You see when a devotee is on that bed where they're going to leave from, there's pictures taped on every angle. Wherever this person's eyes might be, there's a picture up on the ceiling, down on the floor, over on the wall, everywhere, at the end of the bed, you know, tape on the pillow next to them. And it's beneficial. Kirtans are played all the time, whether they're recorded or whether they're live. Devotees are reading scripture, all in an effort to assist this person in overcoming the painful and difficult process of death for the purpose of being able to remember Krishna. Yam yam bhapishmaram bhavam tajananti kalevaram. Whatever one remembers at the time of death, that's their destination. So it's so very important. But here in this verse, Krishna is remembering his devotee, Vidura. How amazing do you have to be that Krishna, while he's leaving this pastime to go to another pastime, is thinking of you. How amazing is that? So certainly Vidura is crying in ecstasy at the very idea that his worshipable Lord is remembering him. This is the kind of prayers we come before Radha Shyam Sundar every day. My dear Radha Shyam, please remember me. Let me come every day to serve you. Please let me remember you. Please keep me close to you. Govardhana me dishatam bhavishtam. May I reside at Govardhan Hill. May Govardhan fulfill all my desires. These are the prayers of the great acharyas to, you know, somehow or another, be remembered by the Lord. So this is a very wonderful example here in Vidura. Now, Prabhupada encouraged us like this. This isn't something new. Even in the very beginning, I mean, we were all just young boys and girls. Those of us that are now like, you know, what's that somebody was telling me when I was in Vrindavan, this Kartik? This is going to be the decade of tears because so many of us are going to be leaving. I mean, we're all in our 70s now. All of us that were, you know, late teens and 22-year-old kids serving Prabhupada with endless enthusiasm, we're all getting ready to leave this world. And from the very beginning, we were in those young years, Prabhupada was teaching us how to die. There's a Bhagavad Gita lecture in 75 in Hawaii. Prabhupada says, if you think of Krishna, how to serve Krishna, that is your perfection of life. Because then you'll think of Krishna at the time of death. Ante Narayana Smriti. That is the perfection of life. Ante, at the time of death. If you remember Krishna then your life is successful. So our entire life is focused on simply trying to remember Krishna. Chanting, reading, associating, observing, all of these different processes, whether it's 5 or 64, all of these different processes we do are therefore helping us remember Krishna 24 hours a day. So what to speak of if we can be blessed that Krishna's remembering us? I mean, that's even more so. But what about the impact of the dying process on this body? It's not always a very comforting thing. You know, we hear descriptions of devotees, so-and-so devotee left this world surrounded by many disciples chanting with the proper japa taper. I mean, such a wonderful way to go out. It doesn't always work that way. Sometimes they're very painful. Sometimes the devotees by themselves. Sometimes there's a horrible accident. This is why you perform the Narayana Bali Puja. If someone departs from this world in a unnatural way. So these different things are there. So what do we do then? Maybe we some kind of a horrible car accident and we're not conscious when we die, or maybe we're not able to speak, or whatever the impact of the process of death may be. What if we're not able to remember Krishna? Well, that's a very unfortunate thing. And it is a reality. It can happen. What do we do then? Well, as with Vidura here, we're given a similar promise. If my devotee is unable to remember me at the time of death because of disturbances felt within the body at that time, then I shall remember my devotee and take him back to my supreme abode. This is from the Varaha Purana. So there's a couple of things we can understand from this statement. First of all, right off the bat, we can appreciate the amazing mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna is so kind. All right, I'll remember you. You've tried to remember me your whole life, and that's another thing to consider from this verse. If my devotee, first of all, my devotee, devotee means thinking of Krishna. Devotee means serving Krishna. Devotee means always there for Krishna. So if my devotee, if we have qualified ourselves throughout this life, I was looking in Nagaraj this morning. I think if you do like, they have these charts of accomplishments. I mean, this is an individual that attended more Mangal Artis than anybody in the entire three worlds combined. He's so steady, so focused, so fixed, So if by the performance of years of devotional service, we can consider ourselves, we can qualify ourselves as a devotee, that means we're thinking of Krishna. But if we're unable to remember him due to disturbances of the body, Krishna admits when the body is being, when the soul is giving up this body, taking its residence someplace else, it is a traumatic time. So many difficulties, so many obstacles, so many disturbances. And if because of all of that, you're not able to remember me, I will remember you. I will remember you. Not only does Krishna say he'll remember us, but I'll take you back with me. I'll take you to my spiritual world. Oh, I remember him. Yeah, he was very nice. Have fun in your next life. No, Krishna's more kind than that. Not only will he remember us, but he'll take us back to his supreme abode. This is a verse we should all be very familiar with. This gives us hope. This gives us comfort that, all right, I've tried. If I don't make it, well, what Krishna says here. Now, if we examine this last verse a little further, there's two things that are very significant about Vidura's state of mind at this time. One is that Vidura is very humble. This is an essential quality of a devotee. He doesn't think, oh, I'm a great devotee, I'm a very dear associate of the Lord. When the great devotees' names are recited, my name is in that list, so yeah, certainly I'll be favored by Lord Krishna. He doesn't think like that. Prabhupada uses the word here, he felt himself insignificant. It's an interesting word, insignificant. How often do we actually think of ourselves as insignificant? Quite the opposite. We think we're very important. Why was I not consulted? Why am I not being properly honored? Why wasn't my opinion accepted? Don't they know who I am that I should be listened to? We've seen these different mentalities. Sometimes the lamp goes around and maybe someone, gives the lamp to someone more junior than, I should have gotten the lamp first. What's going on here? These are not the moods of an insignificant thinking devotee. This is the mood of someone who thinks themselves very important. All of the illusions of grandeur that we suffer from. I won't pollute your minds too much, but there was a song back when we were all growing up addressing these grand illusions that, we all live in, Even then it was understood, yes, this is all just an illusion. The second point that is mentioned here about Vidura is that he cried due to accepting that this was the causeless mercy of the Lord on him. That word causeless, it's very important. And it's used many, many times in the writings and the songs and the teachings of our acharyas. The interesting definition, if you will, of that word is having no justifiable reason. Having no justifiable reason. How are you receiving the mercy of Srila Prabhupada? It's causeless. There's no justifiable reason. I often say I'm just a pasty-faced white boy from the Midwest. What qualification do I have to know any of this, to be in touch with any of this, to do any of this? None. None of us do. But it's the causeless mercy of the Lord. And Vidura is experiencing that causeless mercy. This means, causeless mercy means you don't deserve it. Don't deserve it. What have we done in this lifetime to deserve the mercy of Srila Prabhupada? Now, from Srila Prabhupada's side, he would often look at us and say, you have all been sent by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati to assist me. And Prabhupada can look upon us like that, encouraging us, but we know the reality, the sinful life in which we were living prior to coming to the path of devotional service. So it's causeless mercy, and Vidura was appreciating that causeless mercy that he was receiving. So these two mindsets of Vidura, they caused him to cry. This feeling himself insignificant and appreciating the mercy of the Lord caused him to cry. And not just cry, but to cry Rudrota, very loudly. Rudrota, to cry very loudly, deeply, from the heart. You know, this emotion was not just some external thing. Something felt deep in the heart. You know, over the years, I've attended many, many different kirtans. And sometimes you see devotees are crying during these kirtans. And most of the time when these devotees are crying, you see they're trying to hide the fact that they're crying. You know, it's not like, No, but they're trying to be, you know, a little quiet about it. So I would often say to these devotees after the kirtan, I say, if we're not going to cry now, then when? We're supposed to cry. Vidura is crying. He's a very advanced devotee. The songs of our acharyas, Nartan Das Thakur, crying. So much is there crying. So if we're not going to cry at these key moments in our devotional life, then when are we going to cry? These are the emotions of our love for Krishna coming out. Minimal, neophyte, just the beginning, no doubt. But it is a manifestation of what is there in the heart and can be developed by this process of bhakti. I don't have the original source for this, but it's been said by many, many, many devotees over the years that if we're not feeling that we should cry, then we should cry about the fact that we're not crying about the fact that we're not feeling we should cry. And if we can't cry about the fact that we're not crying about the fact that we should cry about the fact we're not feeling, and so on like that, you can stretch it out however far you want to. We should be crying about the fact we're not crying, that we're not crying because we're not crying for Krishna. We should be crying for Krishna. We should be looking at our situation and realizing this is a pitiful circumstance. Krishna, please deliver me. This is what we clearly have. And why do we know we should do this? Because of these last two sentences in this purport. This is so important here. Prabhupada says, this crying is the last word in the progressive path of devotional service. One who can cry for the Lord in love is certainly successful in the line of devotional service. Very important statement. This crying is the last word. Could I just have the last word here? And then someone else said, no, but you know, I had the last word. You know, there's that kind of, you know, well, I'd like to get the last word in here. Whenever there's an argument, sometimes between husband and wives, I wouldn't know anything about that. But sometimes, no, I get the last word here. No, I'm going to have the last word here. And you mentally do this. You don't do this verbally. If you've been married any amount of time, you don't do this verbally. But mentally, you think, I'm getting the last word here. And well, what's the point back and forth? But here, Prabhupada says it plainly. The last word in the progressive, another important word, progressive, this doesn't come all at once. We work towards it. Progressively advancing through the chain of command in the military. Progressively advancing up the corporate ladder. Progressively advancing in the path of devotional service. That means step by step, day by day, practice by practice. So the last word in that progressive path is crying. And the one who can cry for Krishna is certainly successful. So we shouldn't think, oh, I'm crying, I'm just so useless, I can't do anything. This is, Mahaprabhu was crying in those days. But let us not forget that Krishna is expert at seeing if we're sincere or if we're just putting on a show. So we want to strive in our devotional service to be sincere in our emotions for the Lord. And that manifestation of those emotions is for the pleasure of the Lord only. Not for name and fame or, you know, oh, did you see so-and-so was crying during church? It must be so advanced. You know? No, but that we're doing these things. If they come, we're not forcing them, but if they come, they're being shown, they're being enacted upon simply out of satisfaction for the Lord. And ultimately, this is the mood of the Vraja Gopis. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given his Gopi Bhartupada Kamalaya Dasa 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 Nidasa. Simply to embrace the mood of the Vraja Gopis is the ultimate goal. And they were crying because all they wanted to do was be with Krishna. So this is a wonderful example for us. These two verses here not only conclude this section or this chapter of the Bhagavatam and allow us to move forward, but at the same time they are a very stark example to us, you know. And in that mood, Vidur then retreated to the banks of the Ganges and to the Himalayas to seek the association of other sadhus who were engaged in similar activities. So very, very wonderful conclusion to this chapter on the life of Vidur, on his pastimes, on his instructions, on the instructions he received, and the example that he sets for us in this process of devotional service. So thank you very much. We'll conclude there. If anyone shortly has any questions, comments, corrections, otherwise I have to rush off. There's plumbing problems to be resolved throughout the world. Anybody? No? Okay, good. We'll finish there. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.